This is the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
A note written by a 15-year-old boy who crashed a Cessna into a Tampa office building indicated he supported Osama bin Laden and that the act was deliberate, according to authorities. Now, this is a 15-year-old kid. He might have been depressed. He might have been, well, he might have been. He most probably was, going through a personal angst fairly typical of 15-year-olds that he took to a suicidal extent. Maybe, you know, that's just speculation on my part, and maybe I shouldn't be speculating, but I mean, that's my opinion, and I'm sure that, I bet you money this guy wasn't some huge supporter of Osama bin Laden. It would probably has no significance at all other than the fact the kid was depressed. But if you didn't hear the story, it was a 15-year-old kid who crashed a Cessna into a Tampa office building over the weekend. And we wanted to bring Art Griego on. He's over at the Wing Club in Santa Monica right now. Art, how are you? And thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, Phil.
So what I just said about this 15-year-old kid, does that make sense?
Well, I don't want to comment really, Phil, directly on what happened to him, but I can comment on pilots and on flyers, and I've flown for 26 years. I'm a former commercial pilot. I own a private plane now. And the plain fact is, flying is a very nerve-wracking thing, and I think if anything any pilot goes through, whether he crashes or he doesn't crash, is it's nerve-wracking.
It is. You mean it's a nervous experience?
It's about as nerve-wracking for as nerve-wracking as it is for a passenger, it's doubly so for a pilot.
Well, this 15-year-old boy who crashed the Cessna into the Tampa office building, no doubt there is nerves involved there.
Well, you get up there, and you try and keep your nerves calm. I don't think what happened, I don't know what happened to this kid, but I think what most of the time is happening with pilots who fly their planes into structures, into fixed structures, you get up there, you try and keep your nerves calm, but there are those moments when the reality of the situation kicks in, and that's what we call World War II pilots used to describe it as gremlins.
And I'm sorry, excuse me, gremlins?
Gremlin, what we call a gremlin on my mind. And it's very common for you to suddenly get up there and experience a level of anxiety and fear when you suddenly look out the window and realize what it is you're doing. You're up in the air. There's nothing holding you up. You're in an 8-ton tin can, and you realize I may be flying, but what's making me stay up in the air? And you panic, and the first thing you do is you consider taking your own life. That's how fearful, Phil, it can be.
Now, wait a minute. You're a pilot, and you're flying, and you consider flying your plane into a building because you're afraid?
That is how extreme. The fear is so overwhelming, and the natural thing to do is to look around for a building or any tall structure and just steer the aircraft into it.
We're talking with Art Griego. He's a former commercial pilot, now a private pilot, about the events in Tampa over the weekend. You're not saying, you don't want to comment on this 15-year-old kid, but you're saying that a pilot who flies his plane into a building has taken his own life on purpose?
I'm telling you, I don't know specifically about any situation. I'm telling you what I've experienced, what other pilots I know have experienced. Every pilot, at least once during every flight, contemplates taking his own life because if he goes into the gremlin on my mind panic. And gremlin on my mind means that the gremlins, in World War II, the old World War II pilots used to see gremlins out in the wing.
Yes, I'm familiar with that. Is that what the Twilight Zone episode was based on?
That's what it was. And suddenly, you panic because you're afraid the plane's going to crash. What happens nowadays is pilots suddenly start thinking, I'm up in the air. What? Oh, my God. They'll look out. They'll see there's nothing under the plane. How is this plane doing this? And the fear is so extreme, the first tall structure you see, you want to fly right into it.
Are you saying once in every flight?
On average, not every single flight, but on average, you always keep that option. It's as crazy as it is, you keep the option open. I would rather fly into a hillside than have to contemplate what's making this plane stay up in the air.
1-800-449-8686. Art Griego, a private pilot and former commercial pilot, talking about what would cause any pilot to willingly fly an aircraft into any fixed structure. Our number is 1-800-449-8686. You flew commercially. Was it common then for you?
When I flew commercial, it was very common during an L.A. to New York run, for instance, Phil, to get gremlin. You've heard of streamlined. We used to call it getting gremlined or gremlined. And you'd be out over the Rockies, and you suddenly start thinking about what is it you're doing. And right at that moment, you'd rather take your chances crash landing in the Rockies. And if it's another one of those soccer team deals, that's so be it. And that's what you're thinking about.
Now, when you say another one of the soccer team deals, you're talking about what?
About the
crash in the Andes.
That is correct.
There was a plane crash in the Andes where members of a soccer team were found alive.
Well, you say found alive. Yeah, it was after they ate one of their teammates.
I know the story, but the fact is, you're saying that pilots would consider crashing their plane into the Rockies and taking their chances with cannibalizing each other rather than continue a flight.
That is how extreme the fear gets, yeah. And that happens to every pilot. Now, what happened to this 15-year-old kid? I don't know. Let's speculate. Let's say he was up in the air taking a joyride in an aircraft that he had just appropriated or absconded with at the airport. Let's say suddenly he's flying around some high structures, and he suddenly it dawns on him, oh my God, what's keeping this plane up in the air? It's a panic situation, and the fear is so extreme. He looks over, sees a building, and says, "The hell with it," and turns it right into the building.
It can happen that quick.
It can happen that quick. The older or younger, the more susceptible the pilot is. The older a pilot is, Phil, his mind or his memory is beginning to go, and he may forget what makes an airplane fly. So a older pilot might be up there. And
wait a minute. How old are you talking? You got a pilot up in the air who's a senior citizen?
A senior citizen, yeah. And he may have advancing a deteriorating memory, and he may suddenly think, well, how is it that a plane flies? I can't remember. And then he'll want to kill himself. The same thing goes with...
This is advanced. What about the younger ones?
The younger ones, the memory is not as fresh in them either. So, look at something very tragic happened, Phil, a few years back. That little girl crashed. If you don't believe me, do you remember the story, Jessica Dubroff?
Yeah, that was the 7-year-old with her father.
Right, that was trying to go around the world. She goes from just finishing going doo-doo by herself, and now they want her to fly an aircraft. Now, that is nuts. Everybody knows a kid is going to forget what makes a plane fly quicker than an older pilot. It was natural for her to want to just crash the plane rather than live with the uncertainty of not knowing what makes a plane go up in the air.
Now, wait a minute. Jessica Dubroff was the little 7-year-old who that was an accident.
Okay.
You're telling me she did it on purpose?
I'm saying that it's possible she did it on purpose, not knowing what makes a plane fly and panicking. See, that's what I'm saying. See, everybody forgets that.
Well, I do remember the story, and it was very tragic. That was 5 years ago this past spring. She was attempting around the world or something?
That's right, with her father. And she's 7 years old. The plane takes off. She goes, how come the plane go up in air? Bang, takes it right down, crashes it, because she doesn't know. And I tried to impanel this spring.
How come plane go up in air?
No, I don't know why she'd say that.
What's going on this spring? I know there was a seminar you wanted to do.
I tried to impanel a seminar with some top pilots to discuss whether or not we shouldn't just leave flying to the birds and return to earthbound transportation. At least let the passengers know when they board the plane by way of a leaflet that the pilot is frightened and there's the possibility that the plane will fly into a fixed freestanding structure. They didn't want me to have this seminar. Why? Because they said I was mentally disturbed. And this is what the government does when they want you to, they want to keep information from people. So otherwise, the passengers, I'm sure, would not be resting too easy back there.
All right. Art Griego is with us with some information about flying. Pilots, private pilots, commercial pilots experience something called gremlin on my mind, which is when you suddenly have an anxiety attack about what makes a plane fly, and you purposefully fly it into a building or a freestanding fixed structure, as they say. Is that what happened with that Tampa, Florida kid? Do pilots fly their planes into hillsides or into silos because they suddenly are frightened that they don't know what's making them stay up in the air? Our number is 1-800-449-8686. Art Griego, a 26-year veteran of flight. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
One 800 449 8686. And now more on the Phil Hendry Show.
15-year-old boy flew a Cessna into a building in Tampa. According to Art Griego, he's a former commercial pilot. You're not saying that this was the case with this kid in Tampa, but sometimes pilots get so full of anxiety about what makes a plane fly.
That is correct, yes, Phil.
That they will purposefully ditch it or fly it into a freestanding structure, as you put it?
Yeah, the anxiety is such that a pilot... look, Phil, I flew for 26 years, and I can tell you that there isn't a pilot out there that doesn't, at least a few times during the course of a year, look around and say, you know, I mean, it's crazy, but you'll say, how the hell am I doing this? Look at the planes up in the air. And
don't they know about lift? Don't they know about...
intellectually, yeah, but when you get up there, you're like, Jesus, God, help me. God, help me. That's all you can think. I'll tell you what. As you bring a plane in to land, it is common for a pilot, as the plane is coming in and probably not more than, I'd say, 50 feet off the ground, for the pilot to just want to put his hands over his eyes.
You're kidding.
No, I am not.
Put his hands over his eyes. Why?
Because he can't believe that he's going to land this plane.
Good God.
I know. That's how nuts it is. That's how much anxiety is flying through the cockpit.
1-800-449-8686. Art Griego, former commercial pilot, with some revelations, I guess, about flying. Here is Sheila on the Phil Hendry Show. Sheila?
I'm here.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Art, my God, why did you ever become a pilot? We trust these people that are transporting us all over the world, and it's like if you didn't have the confidence to know that you were going to take care of the people.
No, this is common among all pilots. Sheila, I don't know what
I
you know about it, but
all
pilots go through this level of anxiety.
Okay, well, when they reach that level of anxiety, to me, that's a point to where they need to think about their career, a career move.
Well, okay, great.
Because
anything else?
You know,
tell me something that I don't know, Sheila. Okay.
Sir.
Tell me something I don't know. I mean,
okay,
you got 300 passengers
in
a tin bird, 3,000 feet in the air. Jesus Christ! I mean, that's enough. You're gonna lose your mud.
Okay. Well, all
you
I
start
know
thinking
is the
about
pilots
it, okay?
that I know.
The pilots
they,
that you know.
They are trained.
It's one thing knowing a pilot, and it's another thing being one.
Well, I understand that, they're trained over the years to have confidence. And, I mean, it's with all these crashes that have been going on. That's one thing that they will not do is they don't want to crash into a populated area.
Well, Sheila, until you've actually been a pilot, all bets are off on that.
So until you've actually been a pilot, you don't know how pilots feel. I mean, what do you mean when they're coming in for a landing?
Pilots, many are so insecure about landing an aircraft, it's common for them to say, oh, please, God, help me, just before the plane touches down.
Well, that's a normal
one hand
response.
Over, one hand over your eyes and the other hand on the yoke.
Well, I understand. I think that's
right.
A normal response. But
of course,
tell you what,
of course.
Then
you understand. You understand that a pilot is going to want to, logically, put his hands over his eyes because you're thinking, dear God, help me. Am I going to be able to land this?
On a commercial flight, as I'm coming in for a landing on any one of my flights.
It's possible that when you are
like when my wife and I flew to New York recently.
The pilot might have put his hands over his eyes.
As he was landing there at Newark.
Absolutely not.
No, ma'am. No, ma'am.
That is the craziest thing.
Ma'am, I am telling you, if you're not a pilot, then I don't know why I'm wasting my time.
Okay, well, let me tell you, Art.
If I'm landing at Newark, and as we're coming in, the pilot goes, oh, my dear God, help me, and puts his hands over his eyes.
Yes, for a couple of seconds, yes. And then regains his confidence, and he's back.
All right, 1-800-449-8686. Do you know how scary that is for me to hear that?
Well, I'm not saying all of them. I'm saying that I did.
You did?
Yes, and a lot of the guys I flew with, yeah.
Here is Kevin on the Phil Hendry Show. Kevin?
Hi, how you doing?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'd like to talk to Mr. Griego. I don't know where he's been flying airplanes, but he's an absolute lunatic. I've been a military pilot and a commercial pilot for over 50 years.
All right, well, I'm just saying that pilots are filled with fear.
I think he's wrong. I've been flying airplanes for 15 years, and we don't wonder what makes airplanes fly.
You don't, maybe.
You
don't. You don't.
And I've trained...
I know pilots. I know when I'm a passenger on a flight. I know when I'm a passenger on a flight and we fly over a national landmark.
You don't know what you're talking about.
We are a rat hair away from taking that thing down.
You don't know what you're talking about.
I don't. Maybe you don't fear it, but a lot of the guys that I flew with.
I don't know.
Who are the guys that you flew with?
A lot of guys that had combat. A lot of guys that were shell-shocked. I'm sorry? What'd you say?
Wait. You said you flew with a lot of guys that were what?
Battle fatigue.
Guys that were washed out because they were wacko?
I didn't say that, did I? I said that I flew with a lot of guys that had a few problems.
Here is Ted on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I'm a tractor driver, a tractor-trailer driver. That's what I do for a living.
Oh, there you go. That qualifies you to talk about flying.
No, let me speak. That's
perfect.
Let me get my piece out once. Okay, I have a lot of people's lives in my hands, maybe not 300 at a time.
But about 300 pigs, I'm sure.
When I'm hauling 30 tons of grain.
30 tons of cow.
Will you let him say something, okay?
Yeah.
Well, what's he hauling? 300 head of steer? I'm hauling people.
If I'm going down the highway and I'm carrying, you know, 30,000 pounds or whatever, and I'm driving 70 miles an hour.
And you suddenly don't know what makes the truck go forward.
Can I please speak?
Let the man finish, okay?
Go ahead.
Okay, I've never, ever, I've been doing it 18 years, I've never contemplated running into somebody or taking my own life or killing kind of people because I'm a professional.
That's because manure, when you flip your truck, manure doesn't die, all right?
When I flip my truck, I can kill 100
people. Little moo cow creamers don't die when you flip your truck, but people in my aircraft can die. And
you should have never been a pilot if you ever had that doubt in your mind. You have people's lives in your hands.
That may be, but I know if I'm driving a truck, I know that if I flip it, the tires that I'm carrying aren't going to die.
You don't know listening to me. If I'm on the highway, if I'm on the Florida Turnpike in rush hour traffic, and I decided to just veer off one way or the other, I could kill 50 people easily.
That's nothing near 300.
How can you even measure 50, 100, 60, 70?
Obviously, there's more people related to 300 people than there are 50. That translates into more in terms of insurance dollars.
Will you listen to what this man is saying? The loss of human life is the loss of human life.
You can't count on 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
You can't say when you're behind the wheel of an 18-wheeler and you see an old lady with a walker that you don't think about taking her down.
I have never thought of that. Never in my life.
What a lie.
Oh, come on, maybe you would.
And I'm not a real religious person or anything like that. But I think if I wasn't 100% secure with what I did, I wouldn't do it. I'd find something else. I wouldn't ever doubt it. I'd go to something else right away. I'd find something else to do.
What is the anxiety? What is the anxiety? I just want to ask Ted for a minute. I want to ask Art. What is the anxiety that you feel when you're up there?
You just think, how come God's letting me fly when only birds do it?
I would think a pilot would have so much training.
You have tons of training. I know how to take it off. I know how to land it. But still, when I'm landing, I want to just for a split second put both hands over each eye and just open my fingers and take a peek out.
Oh, that's crazy.
That's nuts, man.
That's ludicrous.
Yes, it is.
You should never fly, and you should have never flown.
Have you ever taken your hands off the wheel of your truck to light a cigarette?
Never. Not once.
Not to take a sip of a beer?
Not once. Not once.
Mr. Hendry,
when I
how about
drive,
you?
I pay attention.
Well, probably 100%. A drink of beer. I mean, no, I never have.
Huh?
All right. Thanks, Ted. 1-800-449-8686. Some pilots don't know what makes the plane fly, and they consider just flying it right into a building. 1-800-449-8686. Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Henry Show is back. 1-800-449-8686.
With Art Griego, he's a former commercial pilot. In a moment, he's going to tell us about having the anxiety called gremlin on my mind and what would make a commercial pilot or a private pilot want to fly his plane into a grain silo. Here is Ellen on the Phil Henry Show. Ellen?
Hi. I'd like to speak to Mr. Griego about that.
Yes, ma'am. It's Art Griego.
Sir, I think you're a screwball, an A1 screwball, and I've never in my life heard of such ridiculous comment.
What
if we all said that about people who drive in a car?
It's different because with a plane, it goes way, way down to the ground and blows up. A car, it can just stall.
Oh, come on. You're cuckoo. You know why you
have
experiences?
How am I cuckoo? A car stalls on the side of the road.
Excuse
it doesn't
me.
Blow up. If
Excuse
a plane
me.
Stalls, it goes...
Excuse me.
And then you don't see your grandkids in the Northeast.
You have hung around people, you admitted, that have problems. And that is the reason
You did, Mr. Griego. You said that the pilots you have flown with had battle fatigue.
All right, a couple of them.
And he's a nut.
Oh, so in other words, a guy's not allowed to take a drink. Is that it? Are you telling me a man's not allowed to have a drink?
Flying on a plane?
Yeah.
Is that what you're trying to say? Well, you know, whoever gave you your license. Whoever gave you your license should be as guilty as you are.
Why? Because of the fact. Why? If you fly to.
You're a real screwball.
Lady, you're not a pilot. You don't know.
What are you saying the pilots drink?
The ones I flew with. Oh, so the passengers are the only ones who get to have a cocktail.
Were you ever on drugs?
Huh?
Mr. Griego, were you ever on drugs?
Which kind?
Coke? Anything like that?
I wouldn't mind popping a party on a flight. When I partied with flight attendants. When I partied with some flight attendants, yeah.
You know what? You're definitely not 100%. I really mean it.
And all
you've
of a sudden,
got a problem.
You belong
in the loony bin.
What are you, the FAA all of a sudden? So all of a sudden now you're telling... What are you, the FAA? You're telling me who's fit to fly and who isn't?
Ellen, are an A1 screwball.
Look, Ellen, let me ask
you
a question. When you were on the beach with the Wright brothers and they were flying that plane, weren't you afraid for them?
You know, you got a problem.
Oh, you're a real smartass, huh?
You're a nut. You're a nut with a capital N. You're a nut. And it's an insult to every other pilot who really knows what they're doing.
Nut is spelled N-U-T, not M-U-T.
Well,
capital
you're both.
M.
You're a nut.
She said a nut.
She said mutt.
She said nut.
Nut.
You don't. Apparently, you don't hear well.
Apparently, you can't spell nut. It's
N-U-T. We heard what she said.
She won't answer my question.
You not only have a problem with your brain, but you have a problem with your hearing.
Ellen,
that's why you had a problem up there in the plane.
When the Wright brothers launched their plane on that beach, where were you?
Where was I? Probably in my mother's belly.
I don't get it.
She wasn't born yet.
Oh.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, come on, mister. Get into a loony bin. You're a screwball. You hear me?
Look, let me tell you something, Ellen. If you were a passenger on one of my planes,
insult.
I'd have you restrained.
I would have you restrained
with duct tape.
No, you should have been restrained against... You should not have been in that pilot's chair. You should have been restrained.
It's called a cockpit, not a pilot's chair.
Whatever it is,
all
you
right.
should not
Thank
have been in
much.
There.
All right, thank you very much. Nobody buys
you
this
do not
whole
know
gremlin
what you're
on
doing.
My mind thing.
I had gremlin. You look out the wing of a plane and you see a gremlin taking your engine apart, what are you going to do? I belly flopped a 737 in the desert and saved the lives, and this is something you won't give me credit for, I'm sure, Ellen. I saved the lives of 67 people. Because I looked out on that wing and I saw a gremlin taking the engine apart. I did the only thing I could do, land it in the desert.
You know why? You got fantasies. What do you mean you saw a gremlin?
What is that, a Twilight Zone episode?
They got that from me. I went...
Okay, 1-800-44...
Now you're going to hang up on me. See, this is what they told me. They said they wouldn't give me my license because they said I was nuts. And the reason why they said I was nuts is because they don't want the truth. I used to keep an extra pair of pants in the cockpit to change into after landing because I crap my pants each landing, Ellen. And I would suggest the same for you.
What a sick guy. What a sicko.
Yeah, he's mental.
Hey, pal, you're a sicko.
Just get another
pair. You're an insult to every other pilot that we know.
1-800-449-8686. Phil Henry Show.
Shut up.
We'll be right back.
Henry, 1-800-449-8686.
You know, this kid that flew the plane into the building, and they're trying to make something out of the possibility that he is of Arab descent, and they wanted to look into that, and they wanted to look into whether he, had some sympathies for Osama bin Laden. And this is just a kid that flew a plane into a building. I mean, it was a copycat. It was like in the 60s when Sylvia Plath, that poetess, committed suicide, and there were like thousands of American teenage girls committing suicide because she was, it was the same thing. It's just a messed up kid who had an airplane, that's all. Just a messed up kid who had an airplane. I'm shocked and stunned that it took this long. America being the sort of copycat country that it is, doesn't that amaze you that it's been October, November, December, January? 4 months and somebody actually tried to do the same thing that those guys did to the World Trade Center. I could have sworn it would have happened sooner than now. That's a sad story just based on this. The kid had what? What kind of relationship did he have with his mother and his father? There's the questions you ought to be answering. Not that I want to get too heavy-osity here, but I mean, where was the mom? Where was the dad? What's the thing? What's going on with that kid's life? Forget about whether he thought Osama bin Laden was any good or not. Hell, on any given day, I may think Osama bin Laden's a good guy. You know, I mean, it just depends on what side of the bed I'm falling out of. But this kid had bigger fish to fry and way bigger problems than his political affiliation. Apparently, he went to the airport accompanied by his mother and grandmother. His instructor left him at the plane to perform a pre-flight inspection. He had no authority to get in the plane alone, and then he took off, and there you go. You know, what's the average age for a driver's license in America? Is it 15 and a half, 15? State of California, 15 and a half, you get your permit. 16, you get your license. Now, I know in some states, depending on whether, and I'm serious, depending on whether they allow tractor traffic or not, it can be like 14. Because some states, they need a kid to get out and tend to the North 40. I mean, they give you a license when you're 12. But I don't see the burning need for a kid to get his pilot's license much before 18. I could be going out on a limb here. I don't know. Maybe there's some states the kid's got to get up and crop dust in the morning. All right, go on, get up there. God damn it, I don't give a sweet Jesus. Well, Grandpa, I only have my permit. Get up there and crop dust. And while you're at it, fly into a building. I really don't see the burning need for a kid to get his license, although I know we live in a country where we don't want the government off of our back and we need to have freedom and yam, 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 yam. But I don't dig where a guy has to have his pilot's license much before 18. Matter of fact, I don't really see much need for a pilot's license before you're 21, do you? It ain't like a car you got to get from here to there. The plane, not unless they get that George Jetson flying thing going. You know, the flying car that I've been campaigning for? Man, I'm telling you, that George Jetson flying car, they ever get that thing going? Every rendering of the future that I see has some flying car. Now, what's the latest? The new movie that's coming out is a futuristic. Oh, the one with Gary Sinise. And it's about 70 years in the future or something. You know, it's called Imposter. And he lives in the United States in the future, and they... And it's the typical trailer with the guy who does the whatever his name is, that one guy with the voice, you know, in a world 70 years in the future. You know that guy? And sure enough, they show it, and there's the flying car. Now, it's 2001, man. We ain't got it yet. And I can guarantee it. Huh? It's 2002, and we ain't got it yet. Do you know that we're well past all those years where they said all the crap was going to hit the fan? 1984, nothing happened. 2001, boring. Well... I mean, boring from the standpoint of anything good happening. And here we are in 2002. Now, there ain't no year left. We pretty much just blasted right on through all the predictions, all those, you know, prognosticators, right? And unless you want to think of 2010, which was a bad movie. Then there is 2019, which was Blade Runner's year. Then there's, I don't know. What was the year with that Haley Joel Osment, that AI? Who cares? 49. Yeah, 1849. So you know what I'm saying? In other words, it's goofy that none of that crap comes true. I wish to God we were better at predicting our own future. I really do, because we'd have the flying car thing. We'd be living about 8 miles up in those big stilt houses. We'd have, you know, I could step outside and there'd be a cloud there. I'd have that robot made. I'd have that conveyor belt that hits me at the door as I walk in. Honey, I'm home, and it just takes me right into the kitchen. How lazy do you have to be? Guy can't even walk to his kitchen. He's on a conveyor belt. And it takes the hat off my head, takes the briefcase out of my hand, got Rosie the robot and the dog, and got Jane the wife and my teenage daughter who's still listening to Frankie Avalon. There you go. That's what they did to Disneyland, by the way. They took Tomorrowland and turned it into the 1950s version of the future. Retroland. Is that what they call it now? Retroland? That's what they got to call it, Retroland. It's cool. You go to Tomorrowland, and it's like it's 1956. They're showing you those three-wheel cars. Oh. All that goofy House of the Future stuff, which they have at Epcot. There's only one thing I saw at House of the Future that's very cool. Here it is. This is cool. They got a machine. I will buy this as soon as it's commercially available. I will buy this. They got a machine. You put in two slices of bread. You put in three eggs uncracked. You just close the door on all of it. And in the morning, it just, your, you know, scrambled eggs are cooked for you. All you do is you put in the bread, you put in the eggs, you put you just throw the bacon in there, too. And in the morning, there's a plate with the bacon all lined up, the eggs. I'm telling you, I saw it at this Epcot. It's the greatest. Now, there's another machine they got, but I'm sure this ain't cheap. You got to, you have a remote in your car, and you flick the remote switch, and the lights come on in your house, and your stereo starts, and your microwave starts, like you put your dinner in there when you left in the morning, everything. By the time you hit the door, the lights are on, the music's on, and your dinner's cooked. And you did that by hitting a button 3 miles out. Oh, you can do that with your computer already? Okay, thanks. 1-800-449-8686, Phil Henry Show. By the way, the big auto show is coming to Los Angeles, the Greater L.A. Auto Show. Why'd you give me this, Janice? What's going on? The colors of your car depict who you are? Oh, we are so past that. That's going to be a stiff. This 9/11, you know, in hindsight, such a good thing because it's flushed so many vanities, you know. Ruby Red is really my sort of take on just the whole international thing, and I've got the S-Series Mercedes, ruby red, just like Dorothy's slippers. Ooh. Okay, thanks. Alex, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Hello.
Hey there. What's going on? I'm Alex.
Got it. What do you want?
Not a whole lot of crap, man. What do you think of that Segway scooter, man? And you think that's gonna...
Here is Tucson on the Phil Henry Show. Hello. Joel?
Yes.
How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing, Phil?
Good.
I was just calling because you reminded me of the futuristic movies that we watched in the past where it was supposed to be all futuristic. And I was thinking about Danny Glover's big flick Predator 2 where we had sci-fi guns and computers, and it was 1997.
How about Predator?
Predator also. But Predator 2 was like the future, and it was supposed to be set in 1997, the future.
Oh, yeah. When did that movie come out, Predator? 80,
I think it was like in the 80s.
89ers? Yeah. Yeah, that's like Strange Days was 99. Oh, sure. Did you see that?
I'm also waiting for the flying car.
All right, brother.
All right,
thanks for calling. Did you see Strange Days? I couldn't figure that movie out. All I know is there's a big lip lock at the end between Angela Bassett and Ralph Fiennes, or is it Ralph Fiennes? And it's just some cop, and there's a video games the guy's trafficking in. Oh, please. 1-800-449-8686. That number again, 1-800-449-8686. That's how you talk to me. This is the Phil Henry Show, where I do the voices of all the guests, and then people call during the segment and go, the voice of the guy that he's doing tonight sounds like the guy that he did last night. Okay. Here is Sandy on the Phil Henry Show. Sandy?
Hey, what's up?
How are you?
Fine.
Well, that's a shock.
Yeah, doing
so what
good.
Can we do for you, ma'am?
Oh, I was just listening to you, you know, going over, like, the whole Jetsons thing and, you know, the lazy guy syndrome. And, you know, it just took me back to, you know, my everyday life, you know, my husband. And just got a kick out of it. Wanted to say I enjoy your show. My mother enjoys your show.
Took you back to your everyday life, huh?
Yeah.
Your husband and, well, we won't go there.
He's the laziest man on the planet.
He's the what?
Kind of thing. And, you know, if he had the conveyor belt through the house.
Is he living? Is he working?
Oh, yeah, he works.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, like you said, you know, the guy, he goes to work, he comes home, he's got the conveyor belt, the robot.
He does.
You know.
Your husband has this.
Well, he, you know, pretty much. I'm the robot. The only thing he's lacking is the conveyor belt.
What's he do for a living?
My husband is a senior systems engineer.
Oh, okay. So this guy, he's got some serious smarts going on.
Yeah, right.
Does he wear a hat to work?
Actually,
how many,
no.
How many
no,
dads wear hats to work anymore?
I don't know. I didn't have a dad, so.
Oh, you never had a dad? Well, they're male, and they come about 6 foot tall. All right, Sandy.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'm very sorry. But that's probably why you got married. Now you have a daddy.
Oh, no, he's not like that.
Okay.
And, you know, he doesn't tell me what to do or nothing. So that's a good part about
that's
you know,
cool
being
thing.
Married. No, he's a good guy. And, you know, I mean, like I said, it just reminded me of the home situation, you know. And
the flying
you know,
car and everything.
Yeah, and it just made me laugh. And
well, thanks.
You know, take it easy.
Okay, see you later. Bye. All right, well, then. Oh, God, I can't get rid of this cold. This is going on week number four with this. I mean, in the night, in the morning, there's phlegm and there's this and there's that and there's coughing and hacking and puking. And it's gotten to the point now my wife gets up in the middle of the night and sleeps. I don't know where she's sleeping now. She hasn't slept in our bed for weeks because I'm hacking my guts up. She's sleeping outside, I think. 1-800-449-8686. Now, the other number I want to give you, 1-888-445-8844 is the number for our Las Vegas Hilton Phil Henry Show listening party. You get the VIP check-in. You get the live broadcast. You'll have a three-course dinner with a blues band. That's for our big cocktail reception on Saturday night. And you'll get the Park Place Entertainment coupon, the match and play gambling, 3 days and two nights. And $379 plus tax is the price based on double occupancy. That means for two people, because we had people calling and saying, what does double occupancy mean? Does that mean two people? Okay, see, I told my friend Eddie that's what it meant. By the way, CNN executives on Monday yanked an on-air promotion that referred to anchorwoman Paula Zahn as sexy. Why? Because they suddenly realized she wasn't. All right, let's go on here to Jay. Jay, you're on the Phil Henry Show. Hello? Jay? Queer. Nothing but homosexuals in Charleston. What are you going to do? Jeremy, hi, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hi, this is Jeremy.
Yes, Jeremy, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great. I love your show.
Thanks, man.
And I was thinking about what you said about the future. And you know that Buck Rogers series that was out in the 80s? Or
Buck
I guess maybe late 70s?
Yeah, Buck. Gil Gerard was in that, yeah.
Yeah, they were like, in the year 1987, when the last of the deep space, whatever, spacecraft came out. And that's pretty funny now because it's like years ago.
When did this Buck Rogers come out, man? Buck Rogers and the something...
And the 25th century, I think they call it.
Well, yeah, it's like the movie Things to Come. It's like H.G. Wells' Things to Come. By the year 1970, when man had destroyed himself, and there was nothing but nuclear waste and rubble.
Yeah,
we can't find it with both hands. All right, man, thanks.
Man.
See you later. Bye. Yes, in the futuristic year 1987. All the big milestone years came and went without nary a wet fart. 1984. Yeah, that was a real Nazi year, that was. Well, if you count Reagan being president, I'm joking. We had the Olympics. We partied. The pot was better than ever in 1984. Then, 2001. I ain't been to the moon, man. They ain't have no monolith. They ain't even got no Pan Am anymore flying to the moon. Guy's supposed to... And the video phone that guy was talking to his little girl on in the movie 2001, the ones we have now, it looks like, Rosie the Robot with that Kamal Ryder guy from Pakistan.
Reporting.
It's Phil Henry Show.